Grantharaksh Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, Text 16. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The Ganges, emanating from the toe of Lord Vishnu, purifies the three worlds, the upper, middle and lower planetary systems. Similarly, when one asks questions about the pastimes and characteristics of Lord Vasudev, Krishna, three varieties of men are purified: the speaker or preacher, he who inquires, and the people in general who listen. Purport. It is said, Tasma gurum prapadyeta jignyasuh shreya uttamam. Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 3rd chapter, 21st verse. Those interested in understanding transcendental subject matters as the goal of life must approach the bona fide spiritual master. Tasma gurum prapadyeta. One must surrender to such a guru who can give right information about Krishna. Herein, Maharaj Parikshit has surrendered to the right personality, Shukadev Goswami, for enlightenment in Vasudev Katha. Vasudev is the original personality of Godhead, who has unlimited spiritual activities. Srimad Bhagavatam is a record of such activities, and the Bhagavad Gita is a record of Vasudev speaking personally. Therefore, since the Krishna consciousness movement is full of Vasudev Katha, anyone who hears, anyone who joins the movement, and anyone who preaches will be purified. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksharam Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manabhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gura Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurun Dina Taranam Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvushe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Avataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanayas Taddhama Vrindavanam Ramya Kachidupasana Vrajavadhu Vargenaya Kalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Premapumartho Mahan Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabho Matamidam Tatradara Naparaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Very warm greetings to everybody on the occasion of this most auspicious day of Sri Krishna Janmashtami, the holy day of the appearance of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna in this material world. Continuing our discussion of events leading up to the actual appearance of the Lord in Mathura, we are presently on the first chapter of Canto 10 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Suta Goswami has been mentioning how King Parikshit asked some questions about Krishna's appearance and his subsequent activities in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka, and also in other places. And Suta Goswami then thanked King Parikshit with great respect and then began to discourse on topics concerning Krishna. An ideal speaker of Krishna Katha, like Shukadev Goswami, is always pleased and enlivened when questions are pertinent, relevant, important, and beneficial. What kind of questions fall in this category? Questions that pertain to Krishna. Munayah sadhu prishtoham bhavadbhir lok mangalam yat kritah krishna samprashno yenatma suprasidati. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, Suta Goswami thanks and congratulates the sages of Naimisharanya for asking him questions about Krishna. He said, Munayaha, O sages, Prishta Aham, the questions you have asked me, I are very good, sadhu. In the society of sadhus, when one wants to appreciate someone for doing something or saying something, one says sadhu, sadhu. Oh, very nice, very good. So Suta Goswami congratulates the sages of Naimisharanya and says, sadhu, your questions are truly very praiseworthy. Why are they praiseworthy? Because they are concerned with Krishna. Yat kritaha Krishna samprashno. Those questions are connected to Krishna. Bhavadbhir loka mangalam. And they are for the welfare and the benefit of the entire world. Yenatma suprasidati. And it is by such questions and the answers that follow that one's very soul will get completely satisfied. So Shukadev Goswami is also similarly pleased to hear the very relevant questions of Shukadev Goswami, of Parikshit Maharaj. And he says, Krishna Charitam Kali Kalmashagnam. He said, Krishna Charita, in other words, topics concerning Krishna's name, form, pastimes, paraphernalia, etc., are Kali Kalmashagnam. Gnam means that which destroys. Kalmasha means the contamination and Kali means the Kali Yuga. So in Kali Yuga, the hearts of people in general are full of all sorts of material contamination. And Krishna Charita, descriptions of Krishna are perfectly appropriate to destroy such contamination in everybody's hearts. And then Shukadev Goswami begins to speak. And he says, "O Your Majesty, best of saintly kings, because you are greatly attracted to the topics of Vasudev, it is certain that your intelligence is firmly fixed in spiritual understanding, which is the only true goal for humanity. Because that attraction is unceasing, it is certainly sublime." He uses the word naishtiki ratihi. Rati means attraction, intense attraction. And naishtiki means that which is firm, which endures, which doesn't shake, which is unflinching. So one who has naishtiki ratihi, or unflinching attraction for Vasudeva Katha, is truly a fortunate person. Samyak vyavasita buddhihi. And one can understand that the intelligence of such a person is fixed and pure. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that Krishna Katha is compulsory for heads of state. And if the heads of state are not well versed in the topics concerning the Lord, how will they be able to lead the praja or the citizens? And therefore everyone quickly becomes degraded. And then Shukadev Goswami speaks this verse that we recited just now. The river Ganga, very exceptional. Of course, the waters of the Ganga are transcendental because they wash the lotus feet of the Lord and then flow into the universe. They first flow in the higher regions of the universe, and then eventually they come down onto earth and even go into the lower planetary systems. In the higher planetary systems, the river Ganga is known as Mandakini. On earth, she is known as Ganga. And in the lower planetary systems, she is known as Bhogavati. So she purifies the three planetary systems, upper, middle and lower. And wherever she flows, she purifies anyone who comes in contact with her waters. In the same way, Krishna Katha is also transcendental. And there are three categories of people who get completely purified when they come in contact with Krishna Katha. And the three categories of people, as Shukadev Goswami says, are Vaktaram, Prachakam and Shrotrin. Vaktaram indicates the person who speaks about Krishna. Prachakam indicates the person who inquires about Krishna. And Shrotrin indicates all the others who are assembled and who hear about Krishna. So this is indeed a very wonderful process where everyone who comes in contact with this Krishna Katha in any which way will be benefited. Perhaps in ways that we cannot even imagine. For example, we may have some bacteria in the air. Perhaps there are some flies in the air. And certainly there are innumerable bacteria within our bodies. They are all responsible for different functions. They help us in digestion and so on. Some are good bacteria, some are not so good bacteria. They all get purified if we are sitting in Krishna Katha. Even the blades of grass here, the sound vibrations of Krishna Katha, the holy names, they will reach out into the blades of grass. So truly speaking, it is mind-boggling the kind of effect that transcendental sound vibration can have. And who knows what these blades of grass will be. They have been hearing Krishna Katha for such a long time, the holy names of the Lord have been vibrating in this area. So who knows what they will be in the next life. So therefore Krishna Katha is mandatory for everyone, especially the political leaders and leaders of all sorts. Because ultimately, every one of us is a leader in some or the other way. And when Shukadev Goswami begins the description of the background to Lord Krishna's appearance, he says Mother Bhumi, Prithvi Devi, was overburdened with the military phalanxes of the different kings all over her planet. And because these military kings and these forces were always creating a disturbance, she was extremely upset. She wasn't happy. She was feeling the great strain. This excessive build-up of military power all over the world is a cause of great strain to Mother Earth and to all the people and living entities living on Mother Earth. Srila Prabhupada speaks one or two harsh sentences here, but they reflect the reality. Quote, "When the residents of this earth become atheistic and godless, they descend to the status of animals like dogs and hogs, and thus their only business is to bark amongst themselves. This is dharmasya glani, deviation from the goal of human life." So this unrestricted build-up of military forces all over the world, atomic bombs and all sorts of missiles, creates havoc. And it destroys the valuable energy of human life, which is meant to be focused on hearing and chanting about Krishna. So Mother Earth, being very aggrieved, took the form of a cow, and she approached Lord Brahma in his planet, Brahmaloka. Brahma also became very concerned to see the plight of Mother Earth. And he also took Mother Earth to go to see Indra and all the other demigods and also Lord Shiva. And he explained the situation. Brahma, having understood the situation, felt himself incapable of solving the problem. So along with the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma and Indra and the others, he approached Lord Vishnu in the milk ocean, the Shweta Dvipa. Shweta means white, white because of milk, and Dvipa means the island. So Lord Vishnu resides in the milk ocean in the material world. That planet is of course transcendental. And he lies there on Anantashesha in mystic slumber. And from there he expands as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu into the hearts of all the living entities. Whenever the demigods are in trouble, they go to Shweta Dvipa. They stand on the shore of this milk ocean. They cannot see the Lord, but they merely understand that He is present. So on the shore of the milk ocean, they stay there and offer prayers. These prayers are called the Purusha Sukta prayers. Generally, traditional Brahmanas will chant these prayers. The Purusha Sukta prayers are chanted at the time of various religious ceremonies. So they go there and they chant these Purusha Sukta prayers, which are basically prayers in glorification of Krishna. But they have the conception of the Godhood of the Supreme Lord. So to some degree, there is this mood of awe and reverence. So the Supreme Lord is Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, lies there in the ocean of milk, and he hears the prayers of the demigods, and he is pleased. However, elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada points out that the Lord is not as pleased with the chanting of the Purusha Sukta prayers by the demigods as he is in Vrindavan when he hears the rebuke of the gopis, or he hears the apparently nonsensical chatter of the cowherd boys. So when Krishna hears the gopis scolding him, they sometimes pull him up, they insult him, then Krishna gets very happy. Or when Mother Yashoda scolds him, then he feels very happy. When his cowherd boyfriends talk amongst each other just like ordinary children do, some kind of nonsensical talk which has no meaning, Krishna feels very pleased with that. Because in Vrindavan such talk is devoid of conceptions of opulence and awe and reverence. Krishna is always seeking that sweetness of love of Vrindavan, and the talk that goes with it therefore is very pleasing to him. But in any case, here lying in the milk ocean, he hears the prayers of the demigods and he responds. But how does he respond? He does not make himself visible, not even to Brahma, the chief amongst the demigods. As all the demigods assemble on the ocean of milk, on the shore, Brahma situates himself in deep meditation. And it is in trance that the Lord Kshirudakshai Vishnu speaks to him. He reveals something to him from within the heart, as Brahma is deep in trance. No one else can hear what the Lord is saying. It is only Brahma who can hear, and even then, only from within his heart. Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport that this has also happened before, earlier, at the time of the creation of the universe, when Brahma is bewildered about what his course of action should be. He doesn't know what to do and how to create the universe. At that time, as is said in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. Brahma is Adi Kavi, the original philosopher of this universe. So Tene Brahma Hrida, in his heart, the Supreme Lord reveals all knowledge that Brahma needs to perform the task of creation. And this happens a second time here, when Krishna is about to appear soon, and he creates a situation in such a way that the demigods now are obliged to go to the shore of the milk ocean. Srila Prabhupada mentions here the example of telephones. Modern science, Srila Prabhupada says, gives us telephones by which one can hear sound vibrations from a distant place. Similarly, although other persons cannot hear the words of Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma is able to hear the Lord's words within himself. When we speak on a telephone, generally, it is only we who can hear what the other person on the other side is speaking. Other people don't know what we are hearing. And there is some kind of extraordinary way in which the sound is transmitted from someone at a distant place, perhaps thousands of miles away, and we hear the sound very clearly. For those who are not acquainted with the technology, it might appear like a very mystical thing, something really extraordinary. But for one who understands the technology, it's quite ordinary. Similarly, the Lord also reveals his opinion or his guidance to Brahma by mystical telephony. Transcendental telephonic conversation goes on between the Lord and Brahma. And it is only personalities like Brahma who understand this transcendental technology who know what is going on. Even the other demigods don't know what's happening. They just know that Brahma is in communication with the Lord. So as Brahma sits there deep in trance, the Lord instructs him and tells him to pass on these instructions to the demigods who are patiently waiting along with him. And this is actually the causeless mercy of the Lord. Just see the position of the demigods. Krishna personally descends to the material world, to the earth planet. He manifests a facsimile, to use Prabhupada's word, of Vrindavan Dham on this planet earth, and then he becomes visible to everyone. Even the ordinary people on the earth planet can actually see him with their very own eyes. But the demigods in the higher planets, even when they go to the shore of the milk ocean, cannot see the Supreme Lord. Even Brahma cannot see him, and he has to rely on this transcendental telephonic exchange. So how fortunate are the residents of planet Earth? This is merely the causeless mercy of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the purport. Then Lord Brahma informs the demigods, yes, here is the instruction of the Lord. He is very well aware of the situation on earth. He knows how troubled and distressed Mother Earth is because of all the other kings on the planet. And he will very soon descend to mitigate the distress of Mother Earth and the residents of the earth planet. And the Lord instructs all of you to appear through your plenary expansions in the dynasty of the Yadus as the sons and grandsons there. A very important instruction. And then he says the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna himself will advent personally as the son of Vasudeva. So apart from all of you demigods, even your wives should appear in order to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport here a point which I also mentioned yesterday, that devotees who are very elevated in consciousness get a chance to participate in the Lord's leelas when he descends to this world. And then they are finally fully 100% purified, they are completely trained, and then they are eligible to go to the spiritual world. Although the Vrindavan that manifests in the material world is also the spiritual world, but they actually get a chance now to go to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada mentions another interesting point here in this purport, that at every point in every universe, somewhere or the other, some pastime of Krishna is going on. Krishna has manifested himself in every single universe in the material world. And sequentially, one after the other, these different pastimes of the Lord take place. For example, when Krishna is born from Mother Devaki in this universe, at the next moment he is born from Mother Devaki in another universe. And the next moment after that, he is again born from Mother Devaki in the third universe. And in the first universe, then Vasudev prays to Krishna, Devaki prays to Krishna, and after they have prayed, in the second universe, Vasudev and Devaki pray to Krishna. After they are done, in the third universe this repeats, and in this way sequentially, one after the other, the pastimes take place in one universe, and they also happen one after the other in the other universes. What a wonderful thing. And therefore Srila Prabhupada says that these pastimes are Nitya Leela. Nitya Leela meaning eternally occurring pastimes. Generally we associate the word Nitya Leela with the spiritual world. In Goloka Vrindavan, these pastimes of the Lord are constantly happening. But here is another interesting way to look at Nitya Leela. Because these pastimes are constantly happening, perhaps not at the same place in the material world, but in different places, but within the material creation. So therefore, from the point of view of the entire material creation, every pastime of the Lord is happening at any given time somewhere or the other. So it is Nitya Leela. So the Nitya Leela of the Lord happens not just in the spiritual world, but also in the material world. So these Suras three, the wives of the demigods, were also so fortunate that they would now get a chance to participate in the personal pastimes of the Lord in Braja. And the Lord instructs through Brahma to the demigods that his foremost plenary expansion, Balarama, Sankarshan, will also appear with him just to please the Supreme Lord. And in addition, Vishnu Maya, Yoga Maya will also appear. And at the request of the Lord, she will appear with the different potencies and accomplish the purposes of the Lord. So Brahma conveyed this message to the demigods. The demigods were all satisfied. Mother Earth was also satisfied now that she knew that the Lord would very soon appear and he would mitigate her distress. So all the demigods then returned to their own respective planets. Meanwhile, Shukadev Goswami now begins to describe what's going on here on the planet Earth in Mathura and related places. There was a king called Shurasena, who was a son of Devamidha, and he ruled the province of Mathura, and he was enjoying pastimes there in Mathura and Shurasena. The place of Mathura has always been the capital city of the Yadus, and they're intimately connected with the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada in the purport glorifies the holy land of Vrindavan and Mathura. And of course at some point, we all have been to Vrindavan or Mathura, perhaps we are hoping to go if we haven't gone sometime. And Prabhupada says that the transcendental influence of the holy land of Vraja is such that one immediately feels some transcendental experience upon entering the geographical boundaries of the holy dham. Of course, it is very important to go in the right consciousness. Merely physically entering Vrindavan dham is not adequate. One must go there with a proper frame of consciousness. Now, there was a king there also called Ahuka. Because there were many kings in so many sub-dynasties. And Ahuka had two sons, among others. One was called Devaka and the other was called Ugrasen. So Devaka had one daughter, other children as well, but one of his daughters was Devaki. And Ugrasen had many offspring, and amongst them was Kamsa. So Kamsa and Devaki were first cousins. So generally in the Vedic culture, the cousin is also referred to as a sister or a brother. So we will see that Devaki is referred to as Kamsa's sister, but she is his first cousin. So in India, you will often find people using the endearing term, she is my cousin sister. Which sometimes people in the West don't understand. They say, either she is your sister or she is your cousin. Which is she? Or in India, you call it cousin sister. So to use that phrase, Devaki therefore is the cousin sister of Kamsa, the first cousin. So Devaki was getting married to Vasudev, who was the son of Shurasena. The marriage ceremony was very grand. Upon the completion of this marriage ceremony, Kamsa, being very fond of his sister, his cousin Devaki, volunteered, as was the tradition, to escort his sister and her husband to her new home, that is to Vasudev's home. So they were on the chariot. And even as he was about to start the chariot, where along with all the other dowry that Devaki's father had given, the kind of descriptions of the dowries here are quite mind-boggling. 10,000 horses, 400 elephants, all decorated with all sorts of ornaments and so on, and so many maidservants, etc. Such dowry, of course, was always given voluntarily. In the modern day, the word dowry in India has become like a pejorative because fathers of the girls are forced to give money. It becomes a kind of a pressure, and even those who are financially poor, they cannot afford to give such dowry, but they are forced to, so they go into penury because they have to borrow large sums of money. But in the Vedic culture, dowry is that which is given happily according to one's capacity. Not that one is so obliged to give that one actually becomes reduced to helpless poverty. So in any case, because King Devaka was so wealthy, he could afford to give all of this. So then, as bugles and conch shells and other instruments were resounding, and Kamsa had taken hold of the reins of the chariot and was about to depart, the atmosphere was very joyous there because of his wedding ceremony. And that at that moment, there was a voice that rung in the air, an unembodied voice. And it is said, it is Abhasya Aha Sharira Vak. A Sharira Vak. Vak means voice, and Sharira means body. A Sharira means without a body. So there was a voice without a body, and it came from the sky somewhere. So, of course, there were the demigods speaking. And they said, "You foolish rascal." Not a nice thing to say on the wedding ceremony as Kansa is preparing to take his sister to her husband's house. "You foolish rascal, the eighth child of this woman you are carrying will kill you." So, what were the reasons for this unembodied voice ringing forth in the sky and warning Kamsa like this? Srila Prabhupada explains that the demigods got worried when they saw Kamsa becoming so affectionate to his sister. That's not what an asura is supposed to do. An asura is not supposed to be affectionate. He's supposed to be very cruel. And here was Kamsa, you know, full of love for his dear sister and escorting her. So the demigods started worrying, if all the demons, you know, if Kamsa starts becoming like this, then Krishna's advent will be delayed. So then they thought it wise to caution him that it was her eighth son who would be the cause of his death. And the second reason is that the six sons of Marichi was the son of Brahma and the resident of the higher planets, they had been cursed that they would be born as the six sons of Devaki, and they would eventually be killed by Kamsa, and they would return to their original abodes. So the demigods also wanted to facilitate one amongst them to be quickly born and return. So for these two reasons, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, the demigods spoke without being seen. Now Kamsa was basically an asura, meaning he was a person who was extremely arrogant, very proud, very egoistic. He wanted to be the lord and controller of everything he surveyed. He was envious and sinful. So at one moment he was very affectionate to his sister. And the next moment, when he heard this unembodied voice speaking, he became enraged. And he had the reins of the horses in his left hand. He released the reins and he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand. With his right hand, he removed the sword from the sheath, and he was about to kill her. He was about to sever her head. And Vasudeva was watching all this aghast, and he immediately, somehow or the other, in order to stop Kamsa, began to speak to him very sweet words, because he knew how cruel and how powerful Kamsa was. So he had to make some attempt to try to dissuade Kamsa from killing Devaki. So he pleaded to him and appealed to his sense of valor and heroism as a Kshatriya. He says, you know, you are the pride of the family and you are such a great hero. And the pride of a Kshatriya is in doing valorous activities. Now what is so heroic about killing your sister? And that too on her wedding day, as she's about to leave for her husband's home. So you will earn great disrepute, my dear Kamsa. So your reputation will be considerably damaged. And then he said, he spoke an important nice verse, Mrityu janmavatam vira dehena sahajayate adyavabdashatam teva mrityu vaipraninam truvaha. My dear Kamsa, Mrityu janmavatam vira. For one who has taken birth, death is certain. Dehena sahajayate. Death is born with the body. An important philosophical point. When is death born? Death is born when we are born. With the very birth of the body, death is born along with it. Meaning that anyone who is born is destined to die. Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityu dhruvam janma mrityasya cha. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. So why should Kamsa do something like this? That is Vasudeva's point to Kamsa. And then elaborately, for several verses, Vasudeva expounds on the theme of reincarnation. Quite a fascinating description of the mechanics of the subtle mechanics of reincarnation. So if you want to learn more about reincarnation, we should read this passage and the purports. Time does not permit us to elaborate on that. Suffice it to say here at this point that Vasudeva emphasizes how it is a flickering of the mind that is actually responsible for the change of body. The subtle is always the support of the gross, not the other way around. So because the mind is subtle and it goes through so many changes, there are multiple desires in the mind, and depending on the kind of thoughts and desires that one has cultivated throughout one's life, the culmination of that is at the time of death. Whatever the mental state, that will determine one's next life. So the state of the subtle body determines the state of one's gross body. In this way, having talked about reincarnation, he appeals to him that such an act would lead to great suffering in the next life, O my dear Kamsa. So please desist from this horrible act. And the next point he makes to him is, you know, Devaki is your younger sister and she deserves to be affectionately maintained by you. You are merciful, therefore you should not kill her. Now he is appealing to his affectionate side. You see, even the worst of asuras also have a soft side to them. Hiranyakashipu, for example, such a terror throughout the universe, so egoistic, so harsh and cruel. But in the beginning, he caught Prahlad onto his lap, began kissing and smelling his head, and was petting him and said, my dear child, what have you learned? Yeah, so even Hiranyakashipu had a soft side, and so had Kamsa. So Vasudev, you know, in desperation, was trying all possible arguments that could be made. So he tried philosophy, he's tried everything, but probably he was watching Kamsa's face and noticing that Kamsa wasn't impressed with philosophy. So he tried to make an appeal to his emotional side and said, you know, you're so merciful and Devaki is your younger sister, you know, it doesn't look good for you to kill your younger sister like this. But apparently, even that was not working. And of course, he understood that actually Kamsa was of the quality of the Rakshasas. And all this would not succeed. So therefore, he thought within himself, I have to think of another serious plan. As long as one has intelligence and one has some strength, one should try one's best to save one's life. Because life is sacred. And life is a gift of the Lord. Therefore, one should attempt to save oneself at any cost. This is the bounden duty of every living entity. So it is not a crime to try to protect one's life and to try to indeed conquer death. So Prabhupada says here, Vedic culture is based on avoiding death. Yes? That's an interesting statement. Vedic culture is based on avoiding death. But not just in terms of physically avoiding death because of disease or disaster in this life, but more fundamentally by understanding how one gets out of the cycle of birth and death. So then Vasudev started considering. He said, if I promise to Kamsa that I will deliver all the sons who were born of Devaki to him, perhaps he may be pacified and convinced. And in any case, you know, death happens by destiny. Who knows? Today I make the promise to him with every intention of keeping my promise, but still, it's still going to take several months before my first child is born. Who knows what will happen in these few months? Kamsa may die. Something may happen. Destiny is supreme. And perhaps the first child may be born. One of them will eventually turn out to be the cause of the death of Kamsa. So in any case, at least immediately, I must avert the threat to the life of Devaki. So in an emergency situation, you may say anything to get free. That is all right, it's permitted, even in the scriptures. To save your life, you can say a lie, you can say anything you like, if it's a question of saving your life. But of course, Vasudeva was such a noble and virtuous person that he did not intend to break his promise. He said, I will say it and I will keep my promise. And ultimately, Vasudeva was thinking, destiny is supreme. Sometimes we see in a forest, a flame leaps from one tree or one piece of wood to another for some unknown reason. So in the same way, by destiny, things happen. Destiny is supreme. And therefore, why should I worry so much about what will happen in the future? Let me avert the impending disaster for now. And then Vasudev spoke to Kamsa and says, my dear Kamsa, you have nothing to fear from your dear sister. The unembodied voice from the sky spoke about the threat to you as coming from her eighth child. So there is no point in killing Devaki. I promise you, I will hand over to you every child that is born of Devaki. Now, such was the nature of Vasudev that even an asura like Kamsa accepted it. He understood that Vasudev is speaking the truth. He will indeed do that. So he said, all right. And then Kamsa let go of Devaki's hair, put his sword back in the sheath, and after that, year after year, for 6 years consecutively, Vasudev took the child who was born of Devaki and handed the child over to Kamsa. But before that, Shukadev Goswami explains what happened after the birth of the first child. When Vasudev went and gave the child, handed over the child to Kamsa, Kamsa was astonished. Such a thing he had never seen before. Which father would like to give his first child to be killed? Kamsa was so struck with wonder that he actually felt compassionate. He felt kind. His heart melted. Yes, even Kamsa's heart melted. And he said, actually, you know, you're right. There is no fear for me from Devaki, neither is there any fear for me from the first child. The voice in the sky talked about the eighth child, not the first child. So therefore I have nothing to fear. So Vasudev, you may take your child and go back home. I have no fear from this child. So Vasudev agreed. He was happy, but he was also anxious. He was happy because the child was not killed, but he was also anxious because he knew that you can never trust a demoniac person. A demoniac person will never be true to his word, will never be firm in his resolve to do anything good. He may be firm in his resolve to do something bad, but not to do something good. So he knew it was only a matter of time before Kamsa changed his mind and came back and killed the first child. But in any case, at least for some time now, there was some relief. Meanwhile, even as Vasudev heaved a sigh of relief, the demigods did not. And they were wondering what's happening. If Kamsa becomes so kind and compassionate, you know, this doesn't augur well for the larger good of the world, and the Supreme Lord will not advent. This will delay the Lord's advent on the earth planet. So then they sent Narad Muni, who is Devarishi, the sage amongst the demigods. And Narad Muni descended there. And as he descended, he arrived, Kamsa welcomed him. Because Narad Muni is such a personality, whether it's a demon or a sage or a saintly king, everybody welcomes him. Such is the nature of a pure devotee. So Narad Muni came there in front of Kamsa. In the notes to this chapter, Srila Prabhupada cites from the Harivamsa to say that Kamsa was happy to see Narad Muni, and he looked after him well, he offered him hospitality, and then Narad Muni, as is his wont, began to speak to Kamsa and incite him to act. He said, you know Kamsa, I have come to see you for a very important purpose, to convey an important message to you. While I was traveling from through the higher planets, I went to Chaitra Ratha, where the demigods had gathered. There was an assembly, and they were all discussing plans to destroy the demons on the earth. And therefore, you are also in the list. And you know, you are also on the hit list of the demigods. And they are making plans right now. And sooner or later, you know, the child will be born who will be the cause of your death. So he provoked Kamsa like that. Elsewhere, I think it's in the Garga Samhita perhaps, it is said that Narad Muni goes to Kamsa and says, my dear Kamsa, why have you spared this child? And Kamsa replies, well, it's the eighth child that is going to be a cause, a threat to me. But Narad says, you know, just see, eight. If you look, count from this side, he's the first child and this is the eighth child. But if you start counting from this finger, then the eighth child is here. So who is first and who is eighth? How do you know? And then Kamsa is confused. Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, who knows? Who is this first child? Who is this eighth child? So that was enough. You know, Narad Muni is often criticized by people that he does such things. You know, why does Narad Muni go and provoke? What was the reason for doing this? Poor Vasudeva and Devaki, you know, he induced Kamsa to go and kill. But actually Narad Muni is not a cruel person. Narad Muni is one of the greatest saints in the entire creation. And he simply fulfills the orders of the spirit of the Supreme Lord. He wants to ensure that the Lord's purposes are facilitated. So whatever Narad Muni does is always for the good of the world. So after the departure of Narad Muni, Kamsa started thinking that all the members of the Yadu dynasty were demigods. Narad Muni has said that. So these are all actually demigods and therefore they are my enemies. And any child born from the womb of Devaki could be the one who is destined to kill me. So he arrested Vasudeva and Devaki and placed them in iron shackles, and suspecting any of the children of Vasudeva and Devaki to be the one who would kill him, every year he killed one child, and thus six children were killed, one after the other. Now, again Prabhupada says something very interesting. He speaks about giving a historical reference of a king called Aurangzeb, a Mughal king in India, how just for the desire to attain to the throne, he killed his brothers, he imprisoned his father, and he had no qualms, no compunctions about doing all of this just so that he would attain to the throne. So this is the selfish nature of demoniac people. And Kamsa was like that. He had no compunctions in killing his nephews, who were only little babies, who were newly born. And Prabhupada says, for demons to do such things is not at all astonishing. Now the interesting thing is that Kamsa knew that Vishnu could not be killed. He knew that the child who would be born to kill him would be Vishnu. At the same time, because he considered Vishnu as his enemy, as a threat to his life and his enjoyment and power and so on, he hated Vishnu. And he got delivered. You see, it's not enough to simply hate. But he hated with the understanding that this is Vishnu. And his hate and his fear was so acute that he became fully Krishna conscious. And that Shukadeva Goswami comes to at a little later stage. But he was not favorably Krishna conscious, and therefore we don't consider him a devotee. Shukadeva Goswami goes on to say, to give us a little history of Kamsa's previous life. Kamsa was a demon called Kalnemi. And he had these six sons. And Kalnemi had been killed by Vishnu in the previous life. And Narad Muni had informed him, "My dear Kamsa, do you know that you were Kalnemi in the previous life? And it is Vishnu who killed you? And now the same Vishnu is coming as your death in this life. So you better be careful. And you kill all these children who are born of Devaki." In the notes also, Srila Prabhupada explains, citing the commentaries of the previous acharyas, about the identity of these six sons of Devaki who were killed. He says, originally they were sons of Marichi. And because they laughed at Brahma, they were cursed to be born in the family of demons. Brahma behaves somewhat inappropriately, but Brahma is such an exalted soul. So therefore, these six brothers had no business mocking him or laughing at him. So they were cursed to be born as sons of an asura. So they were born as sons of Kalanemi. And one time, they performed austerities. They were the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu actually. And they performed austerities to please Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma appeared before them and asked them for a benediction. And they said that, please grant us the benediction that we will not be killed by a human, by a yaksha, a rakshasa, or a deva, that is a demigod, etc., etc. And Brahma granted the benediction to them. But Hiranyakashipu was not pleased that these boys had gone to Brahma to get a benediction. Probably he had hoped that they would come to him for protection. But instead they went to Brahma. So he cursed them that in the next life you will again be brothers, you will be born of Devaki, and he who is your father in this life, Kalanemi, will be the cause of your death in the next life. So, these six sons of Devaki, they're called the Shat Garbhas. Shat means six. Garbha means the fetus or the child. So this was their third birth like this. First birth as the sons of Marichi, second as the sons of Kalanemi, and the third as the sons of Devaki. And once they were killed by Kamsa, then they would go back to their original station in life. So in this way, Kamsa continued to rule with cruelty, and he killed all the children of Devaki. These notes here are very extensive, and I would encourage everyone to read them, because Prabhupada mentions in great detail about the whole situation, the events leading up to Krishna's birth. Then we come into chapter 2 of the 10th canto. Once this had been done, Kamsa continued his persecution of the Yadus. He was becoming increasingly emboldened to act in such imprudent ways because he had the protection of his father-in-law, King Jarasandha of Magadha. And he also had many other demoniac associates like Kalamba, Baka, Chanura, Trinavarta, etc. And therefore all the kings of the Yadu dynasty had to flee from Mathura, and they went to take shelter of different kings in other kingdoms like the Kurus and the Panchalas and etc. Some of the Yadus, however, remained behind in Mathura. Akrura is probably the foremost amongst them. They remained behind and they did not go to other kingdoms. And what was the reason for that? Srila Prabhupada gives the answer in the purport. Chief devotees such as Akrura stayed with Kamsa to satisfy him. They did this for various purposes. For one, they expected the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear as the eighth child of Devaki. So they wanted to witness the appearance of the Lord and his pastimes that he would likely perform immediately upon his appearance. And of course Akrura would later on go to Vrindavan to see Krishna. So all these associates wanted to stay in Mathura so that they could witness the pastimes of the Lord. And the second reason is that they also wanted to see how the six sons of Marichi would return to their original destination. So in the meanwhile, the seventh pregnancy of Devaki happened. as per the Lord's message to Brahma and the demigods, Lord Balaram entered into the womb of Mother Devaki. And to protect the Yadus, the Lord took on this step. Meanwhile, the Lord called Log Yoga Maya. As Lord Balaram entered the womb of Devaki, Krishna called Yoga Maya, his potency, and told her, very nice verses actually, Gachha Devi Vrajam Bhadre Gopa Gobhir Alankritam Rohini Vasudevasya Bharyaste Nanda Gokule. Gachha Devi, O Devi, O Goddess, Bhadre, one who creates auspiciousness everywhere. Gachha Vrajam, go to Vraja Bhumi. Gopa Gobhir Alankritam. That beautiful Vraja Bhumi, which is decorated with beautiful cows and the cowherd men and the cowherd and the gopis, and go there, and there is Rohini living there, incognito, out of fear of Kamsa. Within the womb of Devaki is my partial plenary expansion, Sankarshan, also known as Sesha. Without difficulty, transfer him to the womb of Rohini. Now we have heard all these things at the time of the appearance of Lord Balaram, so I will not discuss that. Suffice it to say that in the purport, Srila Prabhupada here gives the interesting comments of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And there is a nice analogy given here. Devaki is compared to bhakti. Kamsa is compared to the fear of material association. Devotee should always be afraid of materialistic association, because that destroys bhakti. So Kamsa represents the fear of material association. The Shatgarbhas, the six sons of Devaki who were killed by Kamsa, they represent the Shat Ripu. Shat means six, Ripu means enemies. Who are the six enemies of the conditioned living entity? They are Kama, Krodh, Lobha, Moha, Mad, Matsarya. Lust, greed, anger, envy, illusion, and pride. And Kamsa killed the six sons of Devaki, meaning that when a devotee becomes very fearful of materialistic association, then automatically the six enemies inside are destroyed. The six enemies are strengthened and perpetuated when we interact or associate with materialistic people. But when we remain in fear of materialistic association, then automatically these six enemies get destroyed, just as Kamsa killed the six sons of Devaki. And then what happens? And then in the womb of bhakti, Krishna appears. So Krishna manifests within the consciousness of the devotee. So the devotional service that we perform can be compared to the womb of Mother Devaki. It is in the womb of Devaki that the Lord appeared. So therefore, this beautiful analogy is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Krishna continued his instructions to Yoga Maya. He said, please go there and transfer Lord Balaram from the womb from the womb of Mother Devaki to the womb of Mother Rohini. And very soon, O dear all auspicious Yoga Maya, I shall appear with my full six opulences as the son of Devaki, and you will appear as the daughter of Mother Yashoda, the queen of Maharaj Nanda. Yoga Maya must have thought this is such an difficult task, but because the Lord had instructed her, she was empowered, and therefore she readily agreed. to this, to follow this instruction. The Lord also further blesses Yogamaya and says that you will become famous all over the material world. People will worship you in different places on the surface of the earth. You will be known by different names in different places. Durga, Bhadrakali, Vijaya, Vaishnavi, Kumuda, Chandika, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sharada, Ambika. So there are so many names of Mother Durga. And in each place, she has a different name. So, of course, if we understand who Durga is, and we pray to her with this correct understanding, with reference to her as a very faithful, devoted servant of Krishna, and we pray to her for increasing our devotion to Krishna, then such an understanding and worship is legitimate. However, most people in the world who ever worship Durga, they do it for some materialistic purpose. So anyway, Krishna goes on to instruct Yogamaya and says that the son of Rohini will be celebrated as Sankarshan because he was attracted from the womb of Devaki into the womb of Rohini. He will also be known as Ram because of his ability to please the residents of Gokul, and because of his extensive physical strength, he will be known as Balabhadra. So Yogamaya uttered the syllable Om, signifying her acceptance of the instruction of the Lord. And she immediately went to Vraja and did as she had been told. Suddenly it was found that Devaki had a miscarriage. Everyone thought, including Kamsa, that the seventh pregnancy of Devaki had ended in a miscarriage. And Kamsa, of course, was thinking, all right, I have the eighth child to fear, not the seventh. Meanwhile, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, entered into the mind of Vasudev. Vasudev hence became a holy dham because the Lord had appeared there. Sabibhrat Paurusham Dhamma. Paurusham Dhamma. This is a phrase which is explained by the various acharyas. The word dham in this context, Prabhupada translates as spiritual effulgence. When Krishna entered into the mind of Vasudev, he became effulgent, blazing with spiritual effulgence, like many suns. And he was so effulgent that it was very hard to even approach him. Srila Prabhupada also speaks about the purport of the word dham. And dham refers to a place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. And any place where the Supreme Lord is present by his name, form, qualities, etc., immediately becomes a dham. Again, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a dham. And thus he becomes extraordinarily powerful. And everyone is astonished to see the activities of such a person. So these are the various meanings of the word dham. So essentially, wherever Krishna is present, that is a dham. So then Krishna, in whom is present all his expansions, transferred himself from the mind of Vasudev into the mind of Devaki. This transfer did not happen by the normal biological process that happens amongst human beings on earth, but it happened by a transcendental process a heart-to-heart transfer, one of the acharyas have mentioned. A heart-to-heart transfer. Krishna entered into the heart of Vasudev, moved into the heart of Devaki, and then now it was her turn to become blazingly effulgent. And Shukadev Goswami says, Devaki, having thus been initiated by Vasudev, became beautiful by carrying Lord Krishna, just as the east becomes beautiful by carrying the rising moon. You know, when the sun is about to set, it looks very beautiful, and the rays of the sun shine forth, and about the same time the moon is about to rise on the eastern horizon. So it is as if the rays of the sun, as it is setting, are now transferred to the moon, and the moon now carries that brightness and rises into the sky. In the same way, Krishna transferred himself from the heart of Vasudev into the heart of Devaki. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, we should note carefully that the Lord was transferred to Devaki not by the ordinary way for a human being, but by Diksha. Very interesting. So this transfer from Vasudev to Devaki is considered an initiation process. Unless one is initiated by the right person who always carries within his heart the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot acquire the power to carry the Supreme Godhead within the core of one's heart. So now it was Devaki's turn. She was effulgent. She was looking extraordinarily beautiful and shining with radiance. But because she was within the prison cell of Kamsa in Mathura, she was like the flames of a fire covered by the walls of a pot. So that effulgence was not noticed by anyone. But soon enough, the word spread. Kamsa also saw her, and when he saw her, he immediately realized Vishnu has appeared in the womb of my sister. Devaki illuminated the entire atmosphere in the place where she was confined. Seeing her jubilant, pure and smiling, Kamsa thought, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who is now within her, will kill me. Devaki has never before looked so brilliant and jubilant. So Kamsa was in the horns of a dilemma, to use a cliche. What should I do now? On one hand, I must try to kill this child because he will be the cause of my death. On the other hand, Devaki is a woman. Plus, she is my sister. Plus, she is pregnant. And if I kill her, my reputation, opulence, and duration of life will certainly be vanquished. After all, what is heroic about a kshatriya killing a woman who is a sister who is pregnant? So therefore, somehow or the other, he desisted from the very strong temptation to kill Devaki. He remained like that and said, let me wait till the child is born and then we will see what to do. I will do whatever is required. Now that he was certain that the Supreme Lord had appeared within the womb of Devaki, his fear knew no bounds. Shukadev Goswami says that whenever Krishna was sitting on his throne or in his room inside, whether he was lying down or whether he was situated in any other place, whether he was eating or sleeping or walking, Kamsa saw Krishna everywhere. Even when he looked into a glass cup of water, In the water he saw Krishna. He looked here, he looked there, he saw Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Everywhere he saw the Supreme Lord. And he became fully Krishna conscious. But he is not considered a devotee. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam anukuliyena krishna anushilanam bhaktiruttama. Srila Rupa Goswami has defined what top class devotional service is. It is devotional service that is rendered favorably to Krishna and that is devoid of the coverings of karma and jnana, of fruit of activities and impersonal understanding. Because Kamsa's consciousness of Krishna was not favorable, so he is not considered a devotee. This is a very important aspect for us. And another difference is that because he was not favorably inclined towards Krishna, so he was not happy. So the Krishna consciousness of a demon vis-a-vis the Krishna consciousness of a devotee. Both are Krishna conscious, but the devotee is blissful. The demon is unhappy, like Kamsa was. He was always in a state of terror. He was very, very afraid. It is around this time that all the demigods led by Brahma and Lord Shiva arrived there. And they started offering beautiful prayers to Krishna within the womb of Devaki. Time does not permit us to describe these prayers, but they glorify the Supreme Lord, his different incarnations, they glorified his devotees, they glorified his activities, and they also thank the Lord for making them so fortunate that now they would be able to be rid of the demoniac forces on the earth, and because of his advent on the earth planet, they would see now the auspicious marks that are found on his lotus feet, like the thunderbolt and so on. And they would now be able to see all of this. So they continued praying to Krishna, and they also glorified Devaki. And in this way, the second chapter ends. There are many nice verses in these prayers, by the way. The first among them is called the famous Satyam verse, where they use the word Satya many, many times, because Krishna is the ultimate truth and everything about Krishna is the truth. And the demigods understand this very well. So they recite this beautiful verse, and once their prayers are over, they leave and they go back to their own abodes. And we enter into chapter 3, which is titled The Birth of Lord Krishna. And then there came an auspicious time on this very day when all the constellations were auspiciously arranged and everything in the environment was just perfect and auspicious and very, very pleasing. The astrological influence of the constellation known as Rohini, Srila Prabhupada says, was also predominant because this constellation is considered very auspicious. Rohini is under the direct supervision of Brahma, who is also born of Vishnu. And it appears at the birth of Lord Vishnu, who is in fact birthless. So the Rohini Nakshatra, the Rohini constellation was there, and all the other planets were also aligned in the most auspicious way to create the most favorable situation for the appearance of the Lord. Not only that, the climate, the weather was just perfect. Shukadev Goswami at length describes the situation of the environment. The rivers were flowing with clear water, the lakes were full of lotuses that were blooming even though it was the night. Pleasant breezes were blowing everywhere. Fragrant flowers were abloom everywhere. The birds like the cuckoo and so on, they were making pleasing sounds. And all these auspicious symptoms were seen everywhere. Even though it was the month of September, still it appeared in Braj to be like springtime. The atmosphere was cool but not chilly, and the rivers and the lakes appeared as if it was the autumn season. And even though Krishna appeared at 12 o'clock midnight, the lotuses were in bloom. Generally the lotuses bloom only when the sun shines and they close at night. But in this case, even though it was midnight, the lotuses were blooming. The residents of the higher planets were rejoicing. The saintly people suddenly felt a great peace in their heart, and they understood something very auspicious was going to happen. The residents of the higher planets were also dancing in jubilation. They understood that the Lord is now going to appear. And at that time, the Lord appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon. How was it the full moon night? Although this is the Ashtami Tithi, the eighth day of the waning moon. The eighth day of the waning moon is not when the full moon appears. But why is it that it was full moon on the eighth day of the waning moon? Because, Srila Prabhupada explains, Krishna had descended in the dynasty of the moon god, the Soma Vamsha. And the moon god was very happy that Krishna had descended, his most celebrated, famous, important descendant had appeared. And out of jubilation, even though the moon was not supposed to be full, he decided to become full out of jubilation. And thus Krishna appeared. Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan Ki Jai. And when he appeared in his four-armed form. In a wonderful lotus-like, his wonderful lotus-like eyes were looked very beautiful. He bore the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, in his four arms. And his head was full of hair. His chest was marked with the Sri Vatsa. And around his neck was the cost of a jewel. And he had helmets and earrings which were adorned with the priceless Vaidurya gem. And he had various other types of ornaments. When Vasudev saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In jubilation, mentally he collected 10,000 cows and distributed them to all the brahmanas. There were four things that were very wonderful about Krishna's appearance. The first wonder was that even though Kamsa's prison was such a fearful place to be in, this little child did not feel any fear in appearing here. This was the first wonder about Krishna's appearance. The second wonder was that even though the Lord is all-pervading, He is everywhere, but still He chose to take birth from the womb of Devaki. The third wonder about Krishna's appearance was that he appeared fully decorated with a head full of hair. Where do we find a child born not just with a head full of hair but also fully clothed and fully ornamented? So this was a third wonder. And the fourth wonder was that the Lord was a worshipable deity of Vasudev. Now Vasudev's worshipable deity had come as his son. So these were the four wonderful things about the appearance of the Supreme Lord. And at this time Vasudev offered beautiful prayers to the Lord. Again, we do not have time to discuss his prayers. And thereafter, Devaki started offering her prayers. She was very afraid because she had seen what had happened with her earlier six sons. So in her fear, there was also some happiness because she was overjoyed to see this beautiful child appearing. And she began to offer prayers. And in her prayers, she also expressed wonder that that Supreme Lord, within whose womb the entire creation exists, was now appearing from her womb. What a wonderful thing. Everything is situated within the Lord's womb, and that Lord is now within Devaki's womb, and now he has appeared from outside. So philosophically, this is a matter of consideration, a fascinating thing to consider. It has many, many philosophical implications, actually. But Devaki continued her prayers and said, "My dear Lord, I am increasingly getting fearful of what Kamsa may do. So please arrange for that sinful Kamsa to be unable to understand that you have taken birth from my womb. So please withdraw this four-armed form and transform yourself into an ordinary human child." You know, Devaki was afraid. Now this is an interesting contrast between the Lord and Devaki. On one hand, the Lord wanted to appear with four arms and fully decorated and ornamented with a head full of hair, with this insignia of the Supreme Lord, just to pacify and encourage Devaki that there was nothing to be afraid of. "My dear mother, I am the Supreme Lord. I can protect myself. Don't worry. Don't be in fear." So that is the reason the Lord did not originally appear as an ordinary human child. He appeared as a four-armed Vishnu. On the other hand, Devaki wanted the opposite. She said, "Please appear as an ordinary child. Don't appear as in your four-armed form, because then Kamsa will become very angry and envious and he will try to kill you. If you appear as an ordinary child, then at least there's some scope, some possibility of me trying to hide you somewhere. But trying to hide a child who has four arms, you know, rather difficult. It is not so easy. And with clothes and everything like that, that is very hard to do. So please become an ordinary child." But before after she prayed, the Supreme Lord appeared before her and before Vasudev and said, "My dear mother and father, I want to tell you about your history." And in brief, he explained to them that in their first birth, they were Prishni and Sutapa, and they had performed austerities for 12,000 celestial years. And being pleased when the Lord appeared before them and asked them for a benediction, then they had asked for a son just like him. But then the Lord said, "Because there was no one just like me, I appeared directly myself. I personally appeared before you at that time, and I was known as Prishni Garbha." And then in the second appearance, you were Aditi and Kashyap, and I appeared before you as the dwarf incarnation, Vamanadev. And this is the third time I've appeared as your son, my dear mother and father. But this time, the acharyas explained, he didn't appear as his plenary portion. He appeared as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original Krishna. I have shown you this form of Vishnu just to remind you of my previous births. Otherwise, if I appeared like an ordinary human child, you would not believe that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has appeared. And then after instructing Vasudeva and Devaki in this way, he told his father, please transfer me now to Gokul. He gave up his four-arm form. He assumed the form of an ordinary human baby and told his father, please take me across the Yamuna and place me there in the home of Mother Yashoda in Gokul. And miraculously, the chains on the hands and feet of Vasudev opened up, the doors of the prison opened up, the doorkeepers fell asleep into deep sleep, and Vasudev walked with a child, baby, in a small basket on his head. Yamuna was in spate, it was raining heavily, but just as the sea parted her waters to allow Lord Ramachandra to cross, similarly the waters of Yamuna parted way so that Vasudev could actually cross over with Krishna. The Acharyas also explained that at one point Krishna actually fell off into the water. Krishna wanted to fall into the water to bless river Yamuna, because Yamuna had been always eager to get the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. And when the Lord fell into the water, then Yamuna was satisfied. And she, in her jubilation, her waves rose. And there was Vasudev going mad with anxiety, in desperation, searching for his child in the waters. And finally, of course, Krishna made himself available. And then again, Vasudev crossed the river. He went into Nanda Gokul, quietly entered into the house of Nanda Maharaj. Everyone was asleep. At the time, just about shortly after Krishna had appeared as the son of Devaki, Yogamaya had also appeared as a daughter of Mother Yashoda. So then, Vasudev went in carrying baby Krishna with him, and he entered there into Mother Yashoda's room. Another purport that is given of the reason for baby Krishna falling into the river Yamuna is that there was a transformation from Devaki Nandan Krishna to Yashoda Nandan Krishna. Because in Vrindavan, Krishna is Yashoda Nandan, the son of Mother Yashoda. Yashoda Nandan Krishna does not appear in Mathura. So then, as Vasudev entered, he saw Mother Yashoda asleep. She was tired from the pain of labor, and she did not even know whether she had given birth to a male or a female child. And this baby girl was lying next to her. So Vasudev quietly placed baby Krishna next to Mother Yashoda and lifted up this girl who was Yogamaya and took her away. And in the morning when Mother Yashoda woke up and Nanda Maharaj and the others came in, they saw Krishna there. And naturally, there were a lot of celebrations everywhere in Braj. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions something very interesting. The other Acharyas also mention it, and Srila Prabhupada makes a brief mention also in his purports here of this point, that actually Krishna was born simultaneously to Mother Devaki in Mathura and to Mother Yashoda in Vrindavan. So Mother Yashoda actually gave birth to twins, one boy and one girl. One boy was Krishna, Yashoda Nandan Krishna, who was on one side of her body. The other was Yogamaya. So when Vasudev came in carrying Krishna, he did not see Yashoda Nandan Krishna on the other side, he only saw this baby girl. So he kept Krishna here and took the baby girl away. And then the two Krishnas merged. So then there was Yashoda Nandan Krishna who was born. And in this way, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of all Lords, the origin of all the incarnations, appeared in Vrindavan. And he lived there for 10.5 years to perform his pastimes. Shri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava Ki Jai. Shri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan Ki Jai. Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gok Premanande. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.